Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 11. So last week we were looking at verse 7 and faith in relation to Noah. Verse 7 reads, "By faith Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith." And so we considered the relationship between faith and fear. We know, of course, that God was appalled at the state of humanity. Some 1,600 years after the fall, we come to the days of Noah, and mankind is described as being exceedingly wicked, and the thoughts of men were just evil continually. God is appalled by the state of things. He's sickened by the sin. He's actually described as regretting the fact that he made mankind. And there is one righteous who has found the grace of God, that is Noah. And Noah is commissioned to build this boat because God is going to destroy the earth. And we are told that Noah undertook this task in fear. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear. He prepared the ark. So he was fearful of what God was going to do to the world. He took it seriously, and he knew that apart from this great boat, he would perish along with everybody else. We noted faith in relation to the difficulty of building the ark. It was no easy undertaking. There were many challenges, and yet through fear, Noah was obedient, and he ploughed along, and he saw it through to the end. And we just made the point that faith often has obstacles, that there will always be challenges to living the life that God would have us to live, but through faith we stick at God would have us to do. We're more concerned with how God sees us. We're more concerned with the will of God than we are with how others see us and what they want us to do or how we would naturally want to live. So Noah's faith drove him to obey. And we touched on very briefly the righteous inheritance that was Noah's through faith. And so there was a great inheritance for Noah beyond this world. And it was not his through his own works, but by grace through faith. And so we just touched on that briefly. So that's where we were last week. So this evening we're going to be looking at verses 8 to 10, Hebrews 11, 8 to 10. But we'll read from verse 8 through to verse 12. By faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. Excuse me. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man and from him as good as dead were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. So we come then to the faith of Abraham, and in this well-known chapter concerning faith and all these examples of faith, there is more said of Abraham than any of the other examples. And that stands to reason, because in redemptive history, Abraham is a giant. He is foundational to the covenant of God. And so in verses 8 to 10 that we're considering this evening, those verses are concerned with Abraham's faith concerning the land of Canaan, going to Canaan and living in Canaan. And then in verses 11 and 12, we are told about Abraham's faith and Sarah's faith concerning the conceiving of a child when they were well past the age of childbearing. And of course, Sarah had been barren all of her days. And so, God willing, we'll consider that in the next sermon. But then just jumping a little bit further ahead in verses 17 to 22, Abraham appears again. And that's in relation to the offering up of Isaac, a sacrificial offering that God called him to do. By faith, he offered up his son Isaac. So obviously we will come to that, God willing, in a few weeks. I want to begin then by looking at the fact that by faith Abraham journeyed to Canaan. That's our first point this evening. By faith Abraham journeyed to Canaan. Now faith, in terms of its outworking, is always concerned with obedience. So faith obviously relates to belief. We believe certain things, but then when it comes to the practice of faith, faith is actually all about obedience. And we've already seen that intimated. So we go back to Abel, the first example that we considered. Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than that of Cain. Why was it more excellent? Well, it was more excellent because Abel offered what God required. Abel was obedient. And then we saw with Enoch, he's described as a man who walked with God. And that idea is having a life patterned according to the will of God. And he had communion with God and there was warmth and fellowship and friendship. But it must mean obedience. He obeyed the will of God for his life. And then we came to the example, which we've just looked at, of Noah and the building of the ark. Why did Noah undertake this great construction with all of its difficulties? Because God told him to do it. He was obedient to the will of God. So the idea of obedience has always been implicit in all of the examples that we've looked at. But it becomes explicit now when it comes to Abraham. We are specifically told that he obeyed God. Verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. Now, you'll often hear people today speaking of stepping out in faith. It's quite a kind of popular way for Christians to speak. They are stepping out in faith. And what they mean is that they have an idea to do something. There is a desire to do something, and the desire, that the idea that they have may well and truly be a good desire. It's a good idea that they have. It may be a good thing, but at the end of the day, they are pursuing something that really has come from themselves, an idea that they have, and they are trusting that God will enable them to do this thing that they want to do. Now, their intention may be to honour God, absolutely. It may be a good thing. But this idea of stepping out in faith is not really true to what faith is. Faith involves obedience. It involves responding to what God has declared. Now, some 24, 25 years ago, there was a group of Christians in the St. George area who had the idea to have a fellowship of believers around the confession, the 1689, with a view to possibly becoming a church, constituting as a church. And it was called Southern Districts Reformed Baptist Fellowship. And I then got involved in this in Adelaide. The thought was maybe I could come here and pastor the work if it did constitute as a church. And some would say we stepped out in faith. But really, we were never commanded by God to do this. Some people had an idea, and we would say now, some 23, 24 years later, it was a good idea, and God has blessed it. And we trusted God that he would bless this work, and he would add to it and increase it, and it would be fruitful. And we would say he has done that. But I am very reluctant to say that we stepped out in faith, because the idea of stepping out in faith is to obey what God has said. Faith, in terms of its outworking, always involves obedience, and that means it involves the Word of God. For you and me to,
to step out in faith, the outworking of our faith, means that we respond positively to the Bible. We believe what the Bible says and we obey the Bible. That is the outworking of faith. Now, when it comes to the examples that we've considered, we're obviously with Abraham, but we've looked at Noah and Enoch and Abel going backwards. They didn't have the scriptures. They didn't have a scroll or a book to refer to with the written word of God. And so what we would understand is that God communicated directly to them. With the example of Abel, it may be that he understood the relevance of the blood sacrifice through his parents. But the Lord would have communicated that to them. But there was direct communication of from God to man. So when we read here in verse 8, Abraham was called. And we know from Genesis chapter 12 that God did communicate to Abraham, directly to Abraham. But when we read in verse 8 that he was called, we need to understand that Abraham didn't feel called. Abraham was called. And you will come across a lot of people today say they feel called to do things and they're going to step out in faith. This, in a sense, is very humanistic language. A lot of people say they feel called to do things when really what they mean is they've got an idea. It seems like a good idea. It may be a good idea, and God may bless it. And I'll wrap it up in this language. They feel called to do certain things. Abraham did not feel called to do anything. Abraham was called and he obeyed. That's faith. And so Abraham, in a sense, did step out on this journey, but stepping out in faith for him is not the way the expression is used today. He obeyed God because God instructed him to do something. How did God instruct him? We're told that God spoke. But we don't know whether that means it was an audible voice that Abraham actually heard with the hearing of the ears, the voice of God, or whether God spoke through some other means of communication. It could be that God spoke through a dream or through a vision or some kind of impression. It could possibly mean that. But in whatever way it came, Abraham knew that it was God's communication. He knew that this journey and what was before him, he knew that it wasn't of his own making. He didn't have his own dream one night and decide to take his family off to this land. He knew that it was God. And consequently, he obeyed. He did what God told him to do. Genesis 12, verses 1 to 5, which was read to us earlier, the whole of Genesis 12 was read, but verses 1 to 5. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him. And Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Then Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan. Abraham's faith is expressed in terms of obedience. Genesis 12, verse 4, "So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him." And obedience to the will of God also involves trust. We trust that God will do as he says he will do. And that is absolutely the case for Abraham. He trusted that God would do all that he had declared, and that's why he obeyed. He believed that God would be good by his word. And God had said, I will give you this nation, and I will bless you there, and I will make you a great nation, and from you the nations of the world will be blessed. And Abraham believed this, and so he gathered his belongings, his livestock, and his servants, and his family, and all that comprised of his household. He got it all together with his possessions, and off they went. He was obedient because he trusted the word of the Lord. And that sense of trust that is necessary to obedience, that sense of trust is most clearly evident in Hebrews 11, verse 8. And he went out not knowing where he was going. So when God speaks to Abraham there in Genesis chapter 12, communicates to him, quite possibly with a voice, and tells him what he is to do, God doesn't draw a map in the sand and say to him, you're here, and that's where I'm going to take you. Doesn't tell him how long the journey is in terms of distance. He doesn't tell Abraham how long the journey will take in terms of time. He doesn't tell him what's involved. There is some information provided, but there isn't perhaps all of the information that Abraham would have liked. There are details, but not all the details. It was a command and promise that brought with it many questions. Where is Abraham going? How long will it take? What will he encounter on the journey? What about protection and what about provision? How will this promise of a nation coming from him, how will that be fulfilled? He's already of old age and his wife has been barren through all of her adult life. How will a nation come from? God doesn't tell him. And what does it even mean that the nations will be blessed through him? God doesn't say. But Abram takes him at his word. He believes, he trusts, and so he obeys. There is a lesson here for us. God instructs his people what to believe, the fundamentals of the faith, what we are to believe about him and salvation and ourselves and the world around us. He instructs us how to live, but God doesn't tell us everything. And so faith is outworked in the midst of a lot of questions and a lot of life's uncertainties. The life of faith itself is a journey. Take up your cross and follow me. What is that going to involve? We don't know. The call to salvation is a call to follow the Lord Jesus Christ and to follow him in obedience. But what is that going to look like as the years unfold? We don't know. What will obedience to the Lord look like in terms of my working life and marriage and other responsibilities I have? What will it look like for people who are single? What will it look like in terms of service and ministry? What will it look like in terms of the opportunities that will come my way? I don't know, and neither do you. But whatever God has in store, faith compels us to obey because we trust God. So in all of these various contexts, whether we are married and have children, or whether we are single, or whatever our employment looks like, or whatever else comes upon us, in all of these various contexts, to have faith and the right working, the right outworking of faith is to obey God, what God has revealed in these various contexts, though very different they are for all of us. I will trust God. I will obey him in his word. I will live as a godly man in the workplace. I will seek to be a godly husband. I will seek to be a godly neighbor. I will seek to contribute to the life of the church as I have opportunity, and I trust that the Lord will bless me in these endeavors. He may not always bless me as I would like, but I trust He will bless me as I obey Him and I trust Him. I trust Him to meet my needs in these contexts. I trust Him to use me as He sees fit. I think too many Christians get caught up with God showing them things and what the future involves, and God's going to do this and God's going to do that. And I think a lot of it is bunkum. God tells us what we need to know, what we need to obey in the circumstances in which we are in, and that's what we must concern ourselves with. And so the word of the Lord comes to Abraham. It's obviously a unique situation. Abraham could be filled with questions, but he trusted the Lord and he did what the Lord told him to do. So that's the journey by faith. Abraham journeyed to Canaan. Secondly, by faith, Abraham dwelt in Canaan. Verse 9, by faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. And so by faith, Abraham obeyed and he made his way to Canaan, trusting God, as we've said. And once he was there, he also lived by faith. And what this means for Abraham is that he didn't treat the land as though it was going to be his forever, so to speak. He knew that the land was a temporal provision, and he treated it as a temporal provision. He lived in the land as though he was a foreigner. And so we are told that he didn't put down a permanent dwelling. Rather, he dwelt in tents. And he taught his son and his grandson, he taught his family to live the same way. Now, this is not to say that for Christians today that home ownership is wrong. It's not to say that we must rent. Nothing wrong with renting if that's what you're doing, but buying a house is not ungodly. It's not contrary to faith. That's not what this means. But nevertheless, Abraham is an example to us in this, in terms of how we are to relate to the world. He's a picture of how we should sort of treat the world and look upon the world. This world isn't permanent and we are passing through. And so by faith we are to live as pilgrims and sojourners. We're not to become too attached to those things which comprise of what this world is and those things which make our lives in this world what they are. So family, friends, house, money, job, hobbies, possessions. These things all have a place in our lives. They're not wrong in themselves. But by faith, we keep them in their rightful place. They're not the reason for our existence. We're not to allow them to dominate us. We are not to allow them to prevent us. Sorry, we're not to allow them preventing us from doing the will of God. Many years ago, when I was employed part-time by the church, I had part-time work. I worked for a picture framer. Some of you know the guy that I work with who owned the business. And I worked for him for about 3.5 years. And for the most part, I used to catch the train in. The place was in Burwood. And maybe every 6 or so weeks, on a Thursday night when I catch the train home, I'd get off at Central Station. And at the sort of the Redfern end of Central Station, there was a bookshop called Basement Books. It was sort of on the just at the end of the underpass that goes underneath the train lines. And I absolutely loved this place. They had it was a big shop. It was huge, and they had a lot of up to date titles which would retail in Angus and Robertson and Dimmicks for $30-$40. They were in the shop for like $5. All sorts of stuff. history, biography, novels, you name it, politics, military, art, all sorts of stuff. And so I would go into this shop every 6 weeks or so. I would invariably spend hours in there, and I'd always come away with a few books, and I did it on a regular basis. Sadly, the place shut down during COVID. One time I went in there, and as usual, I came out with a bag of books, probably 3 to 6 books, something like that. And as I was walking to the train, there was a verse of scripture which just struck me. It was like a thunderbolt. It sort of came out of nowhere. 1 John 2:15, do not love the world, nor the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. This verse came out of nowhere. And of course, it follows on. The rest of it is relevant as well. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. And I don't know where this came from, but it really struck me, and it remained with me, and I was thinking about it on the train going home. And the sense I actually got was that I spend too much time, I have too much interest in worldly things. I have a lot of interests, one of them being books and reading all sorts of stuff, not just Christian books. And I just had this profound sense that my focus is on too many things related to this world. Not that those things are necessarily wrong in themselves, but the amount of time I devote to them and my interest in them. But I pondered this verse, and the more I pondered it, the more I became troubled, because the less I felt that I actually knew what it really meant. It bothered me that it was speaking to me and I was guilty of loving the world. But the questions I had were, what does it actually mean to love the world? What is the world? How can we define what John means by the world? So I spent some time going through this passage really for myself. I ended up preaching a series of sermons based on these verses as a consequence of looking into it. And some commentators I came across, I didn't find particularly helpful. The world always being defined as that which is sinful. Don't love sinful things. I don't think that's what John means. I think the world relates to all that makes our existence what it is as human beings. And it's quite right to appreciate the things of this world. It's quite right in a certain sense to love the things of this world. And again, some of the commentators almost seem to be saying if you have affection for the things of this world, it's wrong. Well, that's just silly. We're to love our families. There's nothing wrong with you. You know, I love my job. I love playing tennis on Saturdays. I wouldn't give it up. I absolutely love it. But there can be a love, of course, whereby we have affection for things, appreciation for things, we give attention to things in a way that is spiritually detrimental to us. They loom too large in our minds. Yes, we don't want to give up our tennis playing, but the idea that we will never give it up at any cost and we love it more than anything else. The idea that my family mean more to me than God and the will of God. If we esteem things too highly, whatever they are, though they may be legitimate in themselves, we have become idolaters. Now, I don't know if I'd become an idolater with regards to books, but the sense I had was that my focus was on too many other things rather than the Lord and the will of the Lord. And so faith enables us to see this world for what it is. It's fallen, it's temporary. Everything that makes this world what it is may have value in its own way, but it is passing away. We are passing away. This world will let us down, and it will never satisfy the deepest longings of the heart. It will never give us true meaning and purpose. And so by example, Abraham says to us, don't become too settled. Don't become too immersed in the things that make this world what it is. See yourself rather as travelers, as sojourners, passing through to something else. And so by faith, Abraham made his way to Canaan. But then also by faith, Abraham lived in Canaan. He had the right perspective of the land. And he never put down a permanent dwelling, but lived as a traveller, one making his way through. Then third point, by faith Abraham looked beyond Canaan. And that's verse 10, but we'll read from verse 9. By faith Abraham looked beyond Canaan. Verses 9 and 10, by faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And so faith looks beyond this world, this fallen world, to what this world will become. How is it that Abraham understood as much as he did? He looked for that building of God, the foundations which are established by God. God is its builder and maker. How did Abraham understand that there was something beyond this world described as a building made by God? Let us remember, Abraham did not have the scriptures. Well, Abraham was able to look beyond this world because God revealed to him what lies beyond this world. We see the same thing with Job. Job lived around about the same time as Abraham, and Job also looked beyond this world, and what Job understood is really quite extraordinary. How did Job know what was coming? Because God revealed it to him. In Job 19:25 and 26, we read this, and it ties in with what we read about Abraham. Job 19:25 and 26. Job, of course, he's full of sores and life is miserable, and many in his family have died, but he says this, "For I know that my Redeemer lives, and he shall stand at last on the earth. And after my skin is destroyed, this I know, that in my flesh I shall see God." That is profound. That is deeply profound. Job believed in God, his Redeemer, and Job believed that he would see his Redeemer. And that must surely point to the fact that his Redeemer would reveal himself in physical form. Because God is spirit, and he's not seen the way we see physical things, but Job believed that he would set his eyes upon his Redeemer. And his Redeemer would stand upon the earth, and surely the picture there, though it doesn't state it, is that of redemption. This fallen earth under the feet of the Redeemer who will make all things new. It's a picture of conquest. And Job himself would be fully redeemed spiritually and physically. In my flesh I will see God, in a renewed body, a body no longer afflicted with all of these boils and scabs and suffering and pain. All of that would go. Both Abraham and Job looked to the redemption of the earth, described as a city with foundations. In other words, it's permanent. This world in its present state is not permanent. It's fading away. But the world to come, the renewed earth, will be permanent. They looked for a city that has foundations built by God. In Revelation 21 and 22, John pictures the new Jerusalem, a city, God's city, descending upon the earth. In other words, heaven coming to earth. It's the same language, really, in a sense, that is used by Job himself. The big picture of Job, it's not that he is going to go to heaven and go up there to be with God, but rather his Redeemer is coming to the earth. Redemption, full redemption, is coming to the earth. But not only includes him, but the world itself. And so Abraham looks for a city which has foundations, foundations made by God. permanent, a building, a great city created and made by God, heaven coming to earth. And so faith is concerned with the present and how we live in the present. But faith is concerned with the future and what the future has in store for us. And I think it's one of the things that we really must focus on as believers. One of the great helps I've had in life as a believer, when life is difficult, and we know it gets difficult, there's a lot of pain, suffering. We've been thinking in the morning sermons about hostility to the faith and living in a world of unbelievers and the fact that we will suffer at the hands of the ungodly and all of those related things. And, you know, we have opposition to our faith, but there are so many other things as well. There are health issues. Some people just struggle with depression and being down and those kinds of things, and relational issues and one thing and another. And I think one of the great things that helps us in life is to look beyond our present circumstances to that which is to come. Looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross. And likewise, looking to him and that inheritance that we have in him, who for the joy set before us, we persevere like he did. We endure. You know, your life will end. My life will end. And for all of us, though, we're at different ages and different stages in life, the end for all of us is not far away. And so don't get too caught up in this world, either loving it too much and being wedded to it and immersed in it, but at the same time, don't get dragged down by it. Don't allow yourself to become depressed and anxious and overwhelmed because things are not the way you would like them. And life is difficult. It will always be difficult. But don't allow the world to drag you down. In some ways, think of life as staying in a motel. Now, Kylie and I, earlier last year, we went for a drive through the high country of south of Canberra, through Cooma and all that, and around Jindabyne and through Victoria, and we stayed in motels. Now, when we were in those motels, I didn't take pictures to hang on the wall. I didn't take paint to decorate the place and take my own furniture or anything like that. And one or two of them were not that great. They were okay. They were comfortable. They met our needs. We were only in there for a night or two. Aging decor and all that kind of thing. But it didn't really matter that much. We were comfortable. There was a fridge and a TV and a bed, and it was all comfortable, and we were okay. And that's all it needed to be. We're only passing through. Just treat life like that. Don't think that you have to stay in the Ritz, so to speak. Now, maybe a night in the Ritz would be okay, but life is not like that. You know, life is not, you know, the Ritz in Paris or London. Or don't become so immersed, or don't get dragged down by it, or don't have too many expectations and hopes grounded in this world. Treat it for what it is. It's passing what you are passing through. It will all soon end. And there is something much better beyond this world. You know, Canaan was intended to be a blessing to Abraham and his descendants, a land flowing with milk and honey, a land of opportunity, a land that was given to them by God, a land in which they could worship the Lord. But Abraham kept in mind its temporal nature. The land never got the better of him. You know, sadly, there are Christians today, and this is a side issue, so focused upon the Middle East and Israel and the significance of the land. That land was temporary. It's a picture of something else. The true promised land in which there is no sin. There's no disappointment, no pain, no suffering, none of the things that afflict us. And Abraham understood this. He anticipated a better world which was to come, and he lived for that world. He looked forward to a city that had foundations. In other words, it's permanent. Foundations built by God, a city made by God. a new Jerusalem. And Job, in his own way, looked forward to the same thing. And so must we. Well, we'll conclude this evening. Faith sees the Christian life as a journey, because that's exactly what it is. We are making our way toward Emmanuel's land, or to Emmanuel's land. And we don't know what's in store for us along the way. We don't know what God has for us along the way. We don't know what providence will look like next week. But whatever providence has for us, however God deals with us, whatever opportunities we find ourselves in, whatever our circumstances, single, married, with children, this kind of working life, whatever it is, we look to the will of God and obey him in all of those circumstances. And we trust God that he will bless us and provide for us and watch over us, and he will see us through to the end. We are to live as pilgrims, sojourners, not treating this world as though it's all we have, rather anticipating a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness will reign. That's the picture that we have here with Abraham. Well, may we follow his example, and may the God of Abraham, our God, bless the ministry of his word to our hearts this evening. Amen.